Thanks for checking out today's episode of The Experience Curve, where we explore the personal journeys of accomplished individuals, breaking down the steps they took to get where they are, which I hope just might inspire you on your own path forward. Today, I speak with David Feldman, a former financial analyst who traded in his gray cubicle for the freedom of freelance copywriting and entrepreneurial success. From climbing the corporate ladder to breaking free from the 9-to-5 grind and an unexpected lucrative side hustle, David's journey is one of resilience, determination, and finding true fulfillment in pursuing his passions. We'll peel back the layers of his corporate experience, including the challenges he's faced, the sacrifices he made, and the moments of clarity that ignited the fire within him to pursue passion on his own terms. So get ready to dive into David's adventure, where we'll uncover the raw, unfiltered truths that make his story both inspiring and relatable. Hey, what's up, David? Thank you so much for your time today, man. It was great connecting the other day on the phone with you. So I'm glad we had that time to sort of get to know one another. Obviously, you know, we connected on LinkedIn and on, you know, offline before that, but it was cool to get to know you and your story. I'm excited for people to hear your story because I think you've done a lot of cool stuff that is very inspiring to entrepreneurs and people that are just kind of on the fence of like, oh, should I, you know, make that leap? And you're kind of, you know, proof positive that it does work and it can work for people. So, you know, thanks for the time and for sharing your story today.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. You know, yeah, it's been fun getting to know you. So looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah. And I think for people like jumping right in, you know, like a lot of people listening, you know, you were stuck sort of, you know, I was doing that 15 years ago, stuck in a cubicle. You know, I liked my gig, but it wasn't, you know, I didn't really know where I was going to go or what the, you know, was there a ceiling? You know, sometimes you have a boss above you that maybe they're never leaving. And that's kind of your ceiling if you stay there. And they always say to move out, to move up. And if you want to play that sort of corporate game. And your world was more like, you know, you were a financial analyst. You were stuck in this like gray cubicle. Right. But, yeah. You know, you and your family, you know, you decided at some point like, hey, we're going to just kind of go to Europe, figure it out. And I'm going to, you know, find some freelance jobs and or whatever. Right. So there has to be like a mental shift involved, fear, uncertainty, all those things that play into it. Like, how did you even make that break mentally to say, I have this security and I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to make this shift and I have kids, I have a wife and we're going to go for it.
Yeah. Well, it was a long time coming. I'll say that it was a long time coming because I drove to work every day for years and years and years. And not that I wasn't happy. Like you said, I mean, I worked with some really cool people. My bosses, generally speaking, were all really good people. So it wasn't like the people were terrible, but just the job itself, the overall like fundamental thought of like, what was I doing with my life? You know, just sitting in a cubicle driving, you know, it took me an hour to get to work. I'm sitting in traffic. And I used to just tell my wife, like, oh, my word, I can't take this. Like, it's just crushing my soul. Like, I go into work every day and I'm sitting in these meetings and everybody else around me seems to be caring and seems to be like passionate about what's happening. And, you know, I felt like I put on a pretty good show. You know, I always tried to do a good job, of course, but I would sit in these meetings and think, what am I doing here? Like, I don't even care about this. Like, this is, why am I building this company for somebody else? I could be out doing my own thing. So that mental process or that mental thought process was always just festering in the back of my mind. And it just got to a boiling point, you know, where we got to a point where, yeah, I literally remember the moment. I literally remember the exact moment. I could name the road, actually. I could name where I was. And I was sitting, it was a kind of a wintry morning. It was cold. And I could see, I was sitting in a car, just driving, sitting at a stoplight, waiting for it to turn green. There was a car in front of me. And I remember the smoke from the exhaust was just like billowing out kind of over my car and into my dash and my windshield and stuff. And I remember sitting there and thinking, what am I doing with my life? I'm driving into this job that I don't even like. Like, what am I doing? And that was like the breaking point. After that, it really got serious. Where I had conversations with my wife, and luckily my wife is very adventurous, supportive, all that, you know, she's the whole package. And so she was like, well, let's figure out what we can do. And she's adventurous too. So we're like, we started evaluating our finances, evaluating what situation we were, and putting things in place to just make the shift, because we're like, can't live like this anymore. So that was kind of the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in California, so I understand, you know, Los Angeles, the traffic and sitting in that, and like, you know, like that old movie, Michael Douglas falling down, you know, at least it didn't go that way. Right.
Yeah.
But you do know, you get to that point where you're like, oh my gosh, like you know, how many years of your life do you spend in a car commuting to work for some people? And again, if you like the job and you love the boss and you love the employees and that sort of camaraderie you get, obviously then that's a great thing for some people. But I think when you're talking in the entrepreneurial world, people just want more, and you know, they want that freedom. They want to have the option to make their own schedule, to spend time with their kids, to see the whatever, baseball, football, whatever games or, you know, your kids play, and not miss out on those moments. Right. So obviously getting the spousal support is huge, right? But like, what was like, how did you kind of go? Did you go to your boss like the next week? How did that kind of play out when you said, okay, like, wife's on board, we got the kids, we're going to go. What do you do?
So I didn't actually, it's actually kind of funny. And we started planning, we started thinking, we knew that if we had a chunk of savings, we had some savings, and the prudent person, or, you know, the responsible person would say, okay, you know, you've got a good chunk of money that you shouldn't blow that. You shouldn't, you know, you should keep that for retirement. You shouldn't pull any investments out. You shouldn't do anything like that. You should, you know, stay on the track. And so we decided, we're going to use this money because, you know, kind of the YOLO perspective, like, I could be dead tomorrow, so who cares? Let's just go for it. So my wife and I just started planning. We planned, like, well, if we sell our house, that'll even add even more money because the market had turned around and we knew we had some equity in our house. So we kind of figured it out to where we had pretty much at least a year's worth of savings to where we could survive without a job. And that was, once we kind of knew that, then it was just, we started planning the trip. We just started planning, like, where are we going to go? How are we going to do it? What are we going to do? And our initial plan was to go to France, which is what we did. We started out in France. And I remember it was a few months before I actually gave my 2 weeks notice or did anything. But I used to go into work and I'd be talking to my coworkers and joking around and be like, you know what? I'm just going to go to Southern France, just soak up the sun in Southern France. I'm going to get out of here. And they'd all like, oh, you're so funny, David. And they'd laugh. And like, you know, I kind of said it as a joke, but in my mind, I'm like, no, I'm dead serious. And they all thought that I was joking. And then when I came in, I don't know, gave my 2 week notice and told them, like, yeah, I'm leaving. And they're like, well, where are you going? I'm like, we're going to Europe. We're going to travel Europe. And they're like, oh, you weren't joking that whole time. You're being serious. But I'll say this, like, it didn't work out perfectly. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Like, we went to Europe and we were planning on being out there for a year. One thing is our money went obviously a little faster than we thought it would. And second, my wife got walking pneumonia while we were in, I think while we were in England, she got walking pneumonia. And so she was kind of down and out. And so after about, 6 months, we went to Mexico. Actually, my parents live in Mexico, or they did live in Mexico. They don't live in there anymore, but they were there in Mexico. So we went and stayed with my parents in Mexico for a couple months. But anyways, the point is it only the plan was for about a year. It only lasted about 6 months, which was still an amazing experience. I could talk a whole podcast about traveling around Europe. That's a topic in and of itself. But We went to Europe and I hadn't quite figured out things yet. I hadn't connected the dots yet. The idea was when I didn't have a job, I could be free to like think like what's my next move? What's my next step? And I was thinking about that and I had started some things, but they hadn't quite picked up yet. And so I had to go back and get a job. So I was like, crap, I can't just keep, living off this money forever. We're gonna run out of money eventually, so I got to go back and get a job. I didn't want to blow all of it. We still had a little bit of money left, and I was like, I don't want to blow all of this. So I went back and I got a job, and that's when I started Micron, and I worked there. But it's funny, about the time that I started a Micron was when my side hustle that I had started while traveling in Europe really like I don't know, like I wish, that it had like kicked in like a month before, and then I wouldn't have had to get a job. But like literally like a month or two after I started, it just started going great guns and making a lot of money. And then it became to a point where it was like that got to a point where I was making more for my salary. I was making more for my side hustle than I was for my salary. And then it just became a waiting game because they paid for me to relocate and all that kind of stuff. So I had a 2-year commitment with this company. So at that point, it just became, I couldn't leave before 2 years. So it just became a waiting game. And as soon as that 2 years was up, I was gonzo.
Right. Yeah. So well, for the side hustle for people listening, it was copywriting, right? Is what you sort of started over there. And what was it you're able to stay, was it UK you can stay for 6 months as a US citizen?
I can't remember
I
all
think it's,
well, back in the day when I
who
was
knows, could
traveling,
change.
I had all that down. But yeah, you could only stay a certain place for a few months at a time. So we stayed in France for like a couple months. We stayed in, you couldn't stay for longer than, yeah, I think most European countries, it's like 6 months you have to leave or something
Yeah, or
without that.
90 days, and I'm sure things change. There's digital nomad visas. And there's a lot of things that go on. Like you said, that's a whole different show. But like, how did you sort of stumble into to copywriting itself? It was like, were you always a good, because, again, you came from like this financial analyst background. That's probably why you were so like meticulous about planning out the money you had and what you could tap into and what you had to kind of keep in reserve. But how did copywriting come out and become this side hustle, this extremely profitable side hustle?
I like to think that I've always been a pretty creative guy. I've always been, I can't remember which brain is which, right or left, whatever, but whatever side's the creative side, I've always kind of had that, I feel like. But I've also been very analytical too. I don't know, I guess I'm kind of a mix of both. But, working on spreadsheets and that sort of thing, as a financial analyst and doing all these, reports and all this kind of stuff was never really super exciting for me. So I did always kind of try some side hustle stuff while I was working over the years. When I was in college, I did a lot of, I had like sales jobs and stuff. I did a summer sales job in Pittsburgh one summer where we sold, was it pest control or security systems or something? So, I've had kind of some sales background. I did this one thing. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of him. He kind of came big on the scene right at the very start of, I don't know what you want to even call it, the internet. But his name was Ed Dale, and he was a guy down in Australia, and he did this thing called the 30-day challenge, where he basically said, if you can make $1 online in 30 days, he's like, why can't you make 100? Why can't you make 1,000? Just replicate it, do it again. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So I did his 30-day challenge. And I ended up making a few dollars online. I set this whole thing up about like helping people prep for marathons and stuff, and it was a whole thing. But so I kind of had this like background of like trying to like do some internet marketing and just do little side hustles and different things like that. So, and that was just one example. I had a few others where I'd kind of messed around. So I kind of had this background of, I don't know what you would call it, just marketing, sales, in addition to finance. I kind of had this background. So, anyways, we're traveling Europe and I'm looking for ways to make money online. And this is when I I don't know if stumbled is the word, because I kind of knew about it, but this is where I tapped into Fiverr. So Fiverr is the platform. I'm guessing a lot of people listening probably know what Fiverr is, but
Yeah, Upwork, Fiverr, kind of similar. Yeah.
yeah, it's just a freelance platform where you can, showcase your services and do it. So I get on Fiverr and I'm thinking, all right, I'll do financial modeling for people. I'll do PowerPoint presentations for people. I'll do this kind of stuff because this is what I've been doing for the last 13 years. And I put gigs up and nobody ordered them. So actually what I started doing, I was like, okay, well, nobody's ordering this. I said, but who is making money on Fiverr? So I started looking around and I started in Fiverr, you can look and see how many orders are in people's queue. And so I started looking at the different categories. I stumbled across this one called brainstorming, where these people were brainstorming names for $5. Like Fiverr initially, like back in the day, was like, what would you do for $5 kind of thing. And they were like, I'll give you five names for $5. If you're trying to name your blog, or you're trying to name your new book, or whatever that you're trying to name, like I'll help you brainstorm name ideas. So I saw a few people were doing this, and I saw that they had 10, 15, 20 orders in their queue. I was like, okay, there's a demand here. So I created a video. I made a video of myself, like, hey, I'll do all this. I'll give you six name ideas for $5. And I started doing that, and it started taking off. I started making, and I had little upsells, hey, I'll get it to you in 24 hours for an extra like $10, or I'll give you available URL names to go with your name for an extra $10. So I started making money there, and that's what really got me curious, because then I went in and I was like, okay, well, this is working with brainstorming. Who else on Fiverr is making money? And I actually didn't know that copywriting was called copywriting. I had done it kind of sporadically for myself over the years for little projects, but I didn't even know that it was called copywriting or writing copy. So there was a section called copywriting on Fiverr. I looked at it and I noticed that everybody had like 20 orders in their queue. I was like, okay, people must obviously need copywriting. So again, I just made a video and said, hey, I can help you with copywriting. Anything you need, I can write it. I can do it. I kind of had a healthy sense of confidence, and I just put it out there. Yeah, people started ordering, and it just started snowballing and snowballing. People loved my work. I guess you could say I had a natural gift for it, because it just kind of came naturally, and I could do everything that everybody wanted. Pretty much at this point, I've done so many thousands of jobs on Fiverr. Like I have written anything and everything you can think of, but it just grew. It grew, and then I started, and that's about like right as I was kind of discovering copywriting. That's about the same time that I was going back to get a job. So then I got the job, and then the copywriting just kind of started blowing up, and I started having to hire people to help me keep up with everything. So I started essentially building a freelancing, like a copywriting agency, because I at one point I had, geez, like five or six writers like writing underneath me. That spun into other things, because then I started forming relationships with, web developers, people that were, creating websites, or people that were building sales funnels. Digital marketing agencies needed people to write ads for them. I started connecting with all these people and becoming friends with them, because I've been doing multiple jobs with them. And eventually, I started partnering with some of them, started spinning things up outside of Fiverr. And so that's kind of where it all, that's how the side hustle all kind of started.
So is there like a specific, like a breakthrough, or maybe like a, I don't know, even like a financial goal? Obviously, when you're sort of like making more than your salary, I would imagine that would be the kind of kicker to like, okay, this is what's working, or this is what I should be pursuing. Because one, I probably have more control. Like you said, you're hiring people, you're making a bunch of new contacts, you're meeting web developer, that kind of world. And you're also just maybe happier with the schedule. Was there like a breakthrough that you said, okay, this is what I should be doing?
Yeah, I would say, like, for me, that internal drive was always there. So I was maybe a little bit more like, I am calculated, but I also am definitely a risk taker, and I am not one to shy away from taking a risk. So I kind of told you my story. Like, back before I even went to Europe, I was thinking, like, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. And then I went to Europe, and then I came back and got a job. And even from the very first day on the job, I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here.
2 years, right to your gig.
Yeah. So for me, it was just pretty much, it pretty much was as soon as the salary matches, as soon as what I was making passed my salary, then it was just a no-brainer. I probably would have even done it maybe if it was slightly below that, just because I wanted out so bad. But fortunately for me, it was more. But even if it was slightly below, I was just at a point mentally where I was like, I got one life and I'm gonna live it the way I want to live it. And like you mentioned, all those things, like, my bosses were good people. They weren't terrible bosses, but I don't like asking, like, hey, can I go on vacation? Hey, can I go to the bathroom? Hey, can I, hey, can I leave early today? Like, hey, can I, I just always hated it. Or like, hey, David, we're gonna do a review now. You are a 3 out of 5, or I don't know. Like, I was like, no, I'm not playing this game. So for me, it was always, as soon as it was humanly possible, I was out of there.
Yeah, kind of like forge your own path, the second you can kind of, take advantage of the situation. And I think, like, a lot of people listening, it's similar situations, you kind of that, I mean, you kind of nailed it. Like, can I take a vacation? Can I leave early? Can I come into work? I have a dentist appointment, whatever it might be, the sort of permission-based lifestyle that you're constantly, engaged in with your superiors, that for a lot of people, it's just not for them. And for you specifically, right? Like, this, the copywriting world financially made, some good money, but you also started to get some media from it, right? Like CNBC and Forbes. Like, how does that come about when you're, again, I kind of take it as, like, you were on Fiverr at a time, sort of like when, these platforms were popping, and if you could get on them at the right time in the right place, you were able to, leverage that into other things. And, how, like, so could you talk about how those situations came about?
Yeah, sure. So I did have the opportunity to be featured in Forbes and in CNBC for the work that I was doing on Fiverr specifically. Fiverr actually approached me. Fiverr, I had some lady from their PR person approach me and said, "Hey, David, we periodically have publications that reach out to us that want to do stories about our freelancers. And we try to pick some of the, more successful freelancers on our platform to be featured in these articles. Would you be open to being featured in some of these articles when people come and ask us for this?" And I was like, of course, I was like, sure, of course, yeah, I'll do that. So that was what it was. They just emailed me, like, out of the blue, and I was like, yes, this is awesome. And yeah, and then she said, I said yes, and then yeah, like a week later, they're like, okay, we have an article that the people from Forbes want to schedule a call with you. I was like, cool. And then like a week later, they're like, okay, the people from CNBC want to schedule a call with you. I was like, okay, cool. And then they actually did another one. It was the people from, so like Business Insider or something. It
Sure.
was maybe Business Insider. They did an interview with me, but they ended up never publishing the story. So I was kind of bummed about that. I was like, dang it, that would have been my third. But so they did it. That's kind of how that came about. I think I obviously just built up a reputation on the platform, or at least stood out enough to where the people at Fiverr were like, hey, we're going to use this guy, to kind of go out and do our little dog and pony show for us. And so I was happy to do it, because it helped me and gave me some credibility. And so, yeah, so that's how that came about. I'll say this too, some of the other things that I've had the opportunity to get into, a lot of it is because of Fiverr. I literally had a neighbor that when I told him I was going to make, I was going to try Fiverr out, I mean, he literally laughed at me. Like, he wasn't trying to be mean, but like, he laughed out loud, like, ah, you're gonna make money on Fiverr, that's funny. He thought that was funny. And I was like, okay, whatever. And Man, some of the people, you'd be surprised. Some of the connections that I've made through Fiverr, some of the company, like you do get some terrible people. I shouldn't say terrible people, but like you get some tough clients and some like really cheap people on there. But you get some like people that reach out to you that you would be surprised. Like, what are you doing on Fiverr looking for work? Like, like I've made some crazy connections just from Fiverr. Honestly, like even ev all of my work outside of Fiverr, a lot of it I have to contribute. It all kind of funnels back to some of those basic connections I made at Fiverr while I've been on Fiverr. So, I got nothing but good stuff to say about Fiverr.
Yeah, I mean that's huge, right? Because again, you just took this leap of faith going to Europe and kind of were like, okay, what do? I need to find something, and this side hustle kind of grew into, obviously, a huge thing for you in your life, and had a big impact on the way you were able to live your life by your means, right? And so for people listening that are interested, like, okay, I go on Fiverr, kind of get, your bearings, and I think a lot of people feel like, some categories could be overly saturated, and yours, I think, standing out. I wonder, like, making the videos, like being more a personal approach that you took to it. So you maybe took what everyone was doing, but then you kind of put your own spin on it and showed your personality. So I wonder how much of that actually was, more help than you thought at the time, because you're like, oh, I'll just shoot a video. But like when you go on these, because I go on them, and I look for people to help. And the more personal they are, the more I'm interested in hiring them, because you don't know what you're getting when it's just some person that's just chatting you back, and you're like, is this really this guy? Is he really in this country? Is he, you have no idea. It's just reviews, So that, and then I was going to ask also, like, did these media hits help? I'm sure, they're coming to you because you have a lot of gigs and you've have a lot in your queue. But did it also, bring a lot more business to you from then, or did it kind of give you the motivation to like, okay, I'm gonna like start my own company?
Both. To your first question about like the videos and all that kind of standing out, I literally Fiverr has like a forum for the creators or whatever they call them. And I literally was on there in like a 3-day argument with this other copywriter who was one of the other very successful copywriters on Fiverr, and she did not have a video on her gig. And she was making the point like, you don't need a video, I'm crushing it without a video and da 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 da. And she's like, you do not need video. Video, no. She was like 100% against video. And I literally argued back and forth with her in the forum for like 3 days straight. We were just going at each other's throat. And I agree with you 100% that the way that I stood out. And I did. I actually was very, I guess, thought. I thought through this. I did it on purpose. I was very purposeful about it. I made really cool videos that people would catch people's attention. I showed my personality. Like right now, I'm pretty toned down, but like in my videos, if you watch them, I'm pretty animated, and I show people like I'm passionate, and I give them like this sense of confidence. And that was the other thing is like even in the writing and everything, anytime anybody would write me, I would always assume the sale. I would always show confidence. I would always say, they're like, hey, can you help me with that? And I'd write back and be like, of course I can help you with that. Like, that's like nothing. Like, I do that every day. A piece of cake, like, not a problem at all. And like when let's tell me what you need and I'll send the offer over. I look forward to working with you. Like, I assume the sale. Like, I took some very, purposeful steps in how I treated everything, how I made my videos, how I responded to people, how I did everything. So that did make a massive difference. To your second question, which was, remind me what it was again.
Oh no, like these media hits and
Oh yeah,
opportunity.
did the media
Sure.
help me? Yeah, so the media helped me on and off Fiverr. So the media did help me on Fiverr. I think I don't know if there's any way to really quantify it, but I think I did see a little bit of a spike. And I've had a lot of people reach out to me. I published it on my own, like LinkedIn and different places too. And I think it brought a lot of credibility to me, which I am very appreciative of. If it felt cool, like from a selfish perspective, like it feels cool, like when somebody actually recognizes, like, oh, this person's doing a good job, That felt pretty good after, because I'll tell you what, man, starting out on Fiverr was not easy. Like, I was working for peanuts for hours and hours to like get reviews and stuff. I worked for nothing for a year before it really started like cranking, and I was actually making money. Because I remember I'd come home from Micron and I'd work, till 6 or 7 o'clock, get home from 6 or 7 o'clock, and then I'd work till 2 o'clock in the morning writing copy and make like $50 or something from it. And I did that for a year, like a year. And then I got to a point where I could raise my prices. I started making a little bit of money, and it got to a point where I was like, yeah, I'm making money here. And that was cool. But it was not easy. And so that credibility brought a lot, and it brought a lot of other opportunities. I've had multiple people reach out and like, because they read that article and want to do work. And it still helps me even today. I still reference it all the time because, hey, why not? And it's just a good little reference to have in my back pocket, So it's been nothing but generated positive opportunities for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great calling card to have, esteemed, publications like those two to be, again, touting your skills and your hard work, and obviously you put in the work too. Or if you hadn't done that, it's not like you just sign up for this site and someone's like, hey, you made a cool video. Let's, you're putting in the work, right? So obviously all that combined with the fact that you could see your hard work paying off with your personality and things, kind of all collectively came together is my guess. But like, so when you're doing that, right, is it, this is during the time you're at this 2-year gig, but you're also, getting this copywriting side hustle, so to speak, blowing up. We have people under you, right? So this is all kind of culminating at the same time.
Yeah, it was all just kind of, it's all a blur, honestly. I look back at it and I think to myself, I don't know how I did it, but it was a blur. And yeah, it was all kind of going on at the same time. And then I had young kids trying to balance like that and everything, which is why it was more motivation though, too. Like the fact that I was working so hard and so long of hours to like get this up and off the ground, it wasn't that bad. Well, it was hard, but mentally, I was excited to do it because I was actually building my own thing, which I really liked. Like I went to my job every day and worked for, 8 hours building somebody else's company, building, Micron's, 16 whatever billion or whatever they are now company, like making them rich, which I was doing my part to make them rich, and that's cool. But then I came home and I'm like, this is where I make me, this is where I make David rich, this is where I, and so I was always happy and eager to like, it wasn't a chore. Like it was almost like a drive. Just, I couldn't, like, I wanted to do it. And it was I wouldn't say the first time in my life. I've had a few other kind of similar scenarios, but it's kind of the first time maybe career-wise where I was actually really focused on what I was trying to do, and I knew what I had to do, so there wasn't really a question anymore. Like previously in my career, like I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, I knew I wanted to do something, but I just didn't have anywhere to like focus my energy and time, and now I had that, so it was like it was kind of cool. And then yeah, and then I once I got to the point where I could quit, man, it was sweet because I immediately had like 68 extra hours in my week. I mean, I didn't have a job that was taking up 60 hours a week between work and commuting and overtime and all sorts of stuff. I was flexible over my own schedule. I was already used to working pretty much all night and stuff, so I just had an extra 60 hours a week to work and do stuff. And this is when I got into e-commerce actually, because I've got there's a lot of places we things we could talk about. I got into e-commerce and I started an e-com store because that's the cool thing about copywriting too, is you get to work with all these people that are doing all these things, and I get to see I'm helping them. Jeez, man, I've helped so many people make so much money, it's crazy. And I just watch them make all this money, and I'm like the one that's not that I'm the only one, but like I'm a big part of them, like everything that they're doing. And I'm like, man, maybe I should do this for myself. And so yeah, it's been an opportunity to do a lot of that stuff. I got into e-commerce, built up an e-commerce store, built it up to about 40K a month in sales, which was a cool experience. Like, I don't know if you've ever been in e-com, and the people that are listening that have been in e-com, when you got Shopify like on your phone, and it's like you just hear that cha-ching going off like every minute. Oh man, there's not a better feeling in the world than that. So yeah, so I got into other stuff. I work like during the day, I could go to my kids' school program, if they're having a program. Everything that I missed before, I could go see my kids' baseball game. I could go, me and my wife pretty much went out to lunch every day. We still go out to lunch every single day, practically. I went, we go to the movies during the afternoon when the kids are at school, because we're like, let's go to a movie. I go to a movie and then I come back. I still got work to do, but I can do it whenever I want. So it's just been, we joke around. Not that my life is perfect, and I can go into there are pros and cons to each side. So I don't want to paint the picture of like perfection here, but it has been pretty sweet. Like for me personally, this lifestyle is a way better lifestyle than sitting in a cubicle. I've been on both sides of the fence, and there's pros and cons to each one for sure. But for this, for me personally, this has been game changing. And my wife and I always kind of joke around like, oh, we're enjoying our retirement right now, because we did always have that perspective of like, my wife, actually, that was the other reason we came back. I forgot to mention that. That was my wife's dad. My father-in-law had a cancer scare when we were out in Europe, and he had just retired, or he was just about to retire, and he got this cancer scare. Thought it was pretty serious. Everybody was pretty worried for a little while. He ended up making it through, and he's still around, which is awesome. But he, this whole idea of like you work for 40, 50 years and then you retire, and maybe you got 10, 15 years of time before you either can't walk or you're dead. Like that's, I don't know. I just always kept going back, and I think I've repeated myself multiple times here, but like just one life to live. I couldn't do it anymore. So yeah, this freelancing lifestyle, all the opportunities, it's the way to go in my opinion.
Well, and like you said, playing the other side, like, it's not all like, rosy or whatever you want to say. Like, what would you say like are tough challenges, hurdles, the toughest things about having the freelance lifestyle?
Yeah. So a couple things that I think I wasn't expecting. Being an entrepreneur and not having a guaranteed paycheck, I have, I've had some very successful points in time, and things go up and they go down, and they go up and they go down. And you have to be, for some people, that is not, it can be extremely uncomfortable. Like if you lose a big client, or if maybe Fiverr just dips down for some random reason, like in a month, and you're not making as much, and then you on top of that, you lose like two clients, two of your big clients. And you're thinking, holy cow, like next month's not looking so good for money. Like that can be very stressful for some people. It was very stressful for me. So you have ups and downs. And for some people, the security of a paycheck, even though the upside is capped, at least the downside's not ca like at least the downside's capped too for a lot of them. And for some people, that is a they place a lot of value on that. And I don't blame them. Because it's not easy to just ride the roller coaster, you know, every day. And so that's one. Another one is probably like mental health, just physical and mental health too. Like, I realized that working at a job gave me a routine. And when I got off my job for the first year or so, I was just like going like buck wild. Like, I had no routine. I could sleep when I want, eat when I want, work when I want, go to the movies when I want, do anything I want, whenever I want. And I realized that not having a routine actually, like, it started taking a toll on my mental health. And I had to like start actually like getting into a routine, take steps to exercise, to like do have a morning routine where I'm like getting myself set up and doing these things. And I hadn't really realized that, but a job inadvertently just kind of makes that happen, because you have to get up, you have to be to work at 7, you have to, you know, you come home, you eat dinner at 5, you know, you got to get to bed by 10 so that you can get up or whatever it is. So it's like you kind of get this schedule. And when I didn't have that, I'm not going to lie, it kind of threw, after a while, it threw a wrench in my physical and mental health. So that was interesting. I'm trying to think. And yeah, and then just, I don't know, I will say this, like, I love being with, you know, I'm home, I'm with my wife all day, I'm with my kids all day, that's awesome. But I'm essentially a solopreneur. I don't get a lot of interaction with a ton of people. I mean, I work with people here and there, and I have meetings, you know, throughout the day here and there, but like, I've had some jobs where I had some really fun coworkers, and, you know, we had a group of people that, you know, we were all friends. And so you don't get that like as much. You have to physically seek that out. Like, that's when you go to, like, you have to go to maybe like mastermind communities or, you know, some of these like retreats or different things like that to kind of fill that social component that I think as humans helps us stay a little bit more mentally happy too. So, you know, those are just a few things that I struggle with. You know, there's, in summary, I'd say like the schedule, the mental health from that perspective, the socialness, I don't know what the word is. And then, you know, the ups and downs, because it's not always good times, and there's transitional times. And even though I've been doing this now for, geez, like 8 years, and there's been some times where it's been really good and it's really awesome, but there's been a few times over the years where I've had been to a point where I've thought like, you know, maybe I should go back and get a job. Like, it's not always perfect. And so that's just kind of my thoughts on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the structure, you know, that you may miss, right? The camaraderie. And then, like you said, these sort of like financial fluctuations, you know, this month's great, this month not so great, and maybe it all balances out at the end of the year, but it can be stressful. If you were single, it's a different story versus, okay, you have the family. So I think all those things will sort of kind of mold together into what it is for each person, right? But again, missing those things at work still feels like the positives of being that, you know, entrepreneur outweigh the negatives that you've experienced. You know, what would be the things that you're focused on most today, though, in the ventures you're into?
I want to say one other thing too.
Oh, sure.
My wife has always helped me with a lot of stuff. Like, she's, you know, she helped me run the e-com store. She's helped me do stuff, but she doesn't have an outside job. So essentially all the, you know, the money making, like, you know, we have a nice house, everything's nice, and, you know, I don't have that safety net of like my wife has a job or my wife has benefits or any of this stuff. So that stress to me too, you know, we wanted her with our kids and stuff at home, and so that was a priority for us. So yeah, you know, not having a job, that did add like another, like, I'm happy to have the weight on my shoulders, very happy to, but like, and this maybe goes back to the ups and downs of entrepreneurialism, but, you know, having that weight on your shoulders can be, it can be pretty heavy sometimes, especially if your spouse, you know, or significant other doesn't have a job and you're trying to make sure that you're providing for a family. So it's, the weight can get pretty heavy, but I wouldn't have it any other way. So the question was kind of what I'm working on now.
Yeah, like what would you say your most, you know, your the core focuses are right now in what you're doing in this sort of like entrepreneurial space?
Yeah, so I'm by nature, I always have a lot of irons in the fire, and it's just the way I am. I always have multiple things going on. I have my copywriting going on. Now, this maybe is another conversation because we've been going for a while, but AI definitely took a toll on my copywriting, my Fiverr specific copywriting. AI came along and took out a lot of lower level copy jobs, which is okay. I've got my whole opinion on that. We've actually talked about that, but I've positioned myself more now because I have built up the resume. Like I've written a lot of copy for a lot of people, like I said, thousands and thousands of jobs. But I've written some copy that has done some really amazing things. I've written some copy that's for a sales funnel that's done $100 million in sales. We got to go to the ClickFunnels Hackers and get award re rewarded or get the award for that. I've helped a lot of people write million sales funnels that have generated millions of dollars. I've written even, you know, like copy for a former president of the United States. I've written copy for celebrities. So I've got to a point too now where, and I still have some writers that work for me. I kind of do my thing and I limit it now. I work with some specialized clients that are a little bit more, I don't know what the word is, but they know they're in a space where they're running a company or they have a product or something that they're doing that is generating some money. So, and they know the value of really, really high quality copy. They know, like, if they're making 100 grand now, if they put the right pieces in place, they can scale it to 1 million, 10 million, 100 million, which I've done for clients. So now I basically limit it. I say, and also for my work-life balance, because I was working so hard for so long, I was saying yes to so many jobs. Everybody, I have a bad habit of just saying yes to everybody. So I actually just started saying no, and I keep it to four clients. I'm like, I got four clients at a time. That's it. Because that way I can guarantee that my brain power is being used to like give you the biggest bang for your buck. So I take four clients at a time. I focus on them. If I have li other littler jobs, generally that will go to people that I'm working with. I expanded. I don't think we actually talked about this, but after Fiverr, I expanded into a whole digital marketing agency where we did everything. Websites, we built the funnels, we did the SEO optimization, we ran their Facebook ads and their TikTok ads, we did all that stuff. And then I've since again contracted it. And I've contracted and I've said, you know what, I don't need to build an agency. I don't need to like spend hours and hours managing a whole team of people. We had like 8 or 9 people working at our agency, and I've expanded to all that. And then I've contracted and I've realized, you know what? I just like doing my thing and like operating in my like zone, genius zone, where I can really deliver the biggest impact. And that's copywriting. Not to say that I can't do all that other stuff, because I do still consult and like do some like here and there for people, like with a lot of stuff, marketing in general and branding and all that kind of stuff. Mug Branding is my company, and I take four clients. It's copywriting. The other thing, I'll make this quick. I write obviously all day. I sit here and write, and I started listening to ambient music while I write because I just couldn't listen to the radio. It was too distracting, too much. You know, the DJ would come on or whatever. I just didn't like it. So I started listening to ambient music to really like get in the zone. And like I said, I'm a pretty creative guy. I grew up, you know, you can maybe see here, I've got like a guitar in the background. I played the piano, took 9 years of piano lessons. I kind of know music a little bit. I wouldn't say I'm a musician, but so I'm like, I could just write my own ambient music. Like, why not? So I started Mindcastle Music, and I started writing and publishing ambient music, which is seem a lot of people really like it. I just put it out there. I started writing it for myself. And then I was like, hey, you know, maybe I should put this out like on YouTube or something. So I started putting it out on YouTube and people really started liking it. And, you know, I started getting these messages like, you know, hey, you know, my daughter has autism and she could never like focus for her schoolwork. And I put your music on and she like immediately calmed down. And like now we listen to it every day. And, or, you know, somebody just left a comment like, I've been trying to get like sleep for like 4 years and I couldn't sleep or do anything. And now I found your music and it like, I can sleep now. It like, I haven't been able to sleep for 4 years and now I listen to your music every night. And I'm just like, I'm blown away by these things because I'm like, holy cow. I was just writing music just to like, you know, have some music because I thought it was kind of fun and like to have my own music to listen to instead of just listen to other people's music. And that's been really cool. So I've got that on YouTube. I've got it on Insight Timer, which is an app. I don't know if anybody listening knows Insight Timer, but and then I'm trying to get on Spotify, but I've been kind of lazy about getting on Spotify. A lot of people keep asking me if I'm on Spotify, but I'm not. And then my latest and probably main focus right now too is a industry publication slash newsletter slash resource called Pickleball Brief. As maybe a few people listening might know, pickleball is taking America and the world by storm, and everybody's on the pickleball train seemingly.
They are.
My business model though is more, we're focused on the business side of pickleball. You know, I come from a finance background. I come from a writing background. So I partnered with a gentleman, and you know, I'm kind of sitting. We're co-founders of this. He has a background in building industry publications. He's done it in the auto racing industry. He's done it in the outdoor retail space, building up these publications, and then ultimately, most of the time, they get bought out by bigger publishers. But so he has that. I sit in the editor-in-chief role. You know, I'm writing the content, procuring all the content, actually like working to create like a stable of writers. We're working on that right now. And you know, we're creating a resource for people in the pickleball industry, so pickleball business owners, so club owners, people that are manufacturing paddles, balls, nets, whatever they're manufacturing, service people in the industry, people that are going to be running franchises, people that want to open a franchise. Any of these people that are developing apps, there's all sorts of apps and things that are being developed to help pickleball players and clubs. So it's the Wild West in pickleball right now, honestly. And there's a lot of chaos around this. There's a lot of people putting a lot of stuff out, but nobody's really putting anything significant out. And so as an industry resource, and if you look, I can't name all of them because if I got my partner on the phone, he could probably name every single one of them. But pretty much every industry has like an industry publication resource that most people just subscribe to. If you're in the industry, you know, like my accountant subscribes to Kiplinger's and he gets their newsletter every month or whatever. And that's just what you do if you're an accountant. And so that's what we're building for Pickleball Brief. Like if you're running a pickleball business, like you subscribe to Pickleball Brief because it's going to give you the actionable insights, data, information that you need to run your business and to kind of help you, give you those little tidbits and tips and tricks and strategies and thoughts and ideas and information. So that is Pickleball Brief, and that's kind of one of my big projects right now. And we're building that out. We're building up the subscribers to that, which is, and so far it's going pretty good. So if anybody out there listening to this is pickleball, I'm thinking about starting a pickleball club or into pickleball, the business side of pickleball, you know, some sort of, because that's what happens is a lot of people get into pickleball. They love playing it. And then they think to themselves, ooh, I want to start my own pickleball club, or I want to build some, I want to help my local city build some at our park here, or, you know, whatever the situation may be. If you're kind of in a situation like that, what we're doing is can be highly valuable to people like that. So those are I'd say Mug, Mindcastle, Pickleball Brief. If you go to my LinkedIn profile, I think under my title I have Pickleball Marketing and Music. And I'm sure I'm confused people when they probably go to my profile. They're just like, who is this guy? But hey, that's me.
Yeah, you're doing your thing, right? You're doing what makes you happy. And I think that that's probably the big takeaway, right? Is, you're doing the things that make you happy. You're spending time with your wife, you're being there for your kids, and you're doing fun projects because you can afford to, and you've set a lifestyle up for yourself to where you can take advantage of these things. And they might be like, hey, like you said, I just don't want to hear AM DJs talking. I just, right? Like, I just want to make music for my own sake, right? And now it's like, wow, it's actually like touching other people, or and then other things you can do, and like, hey, if I can make some money at these, great. Or if I can, help people with this, great. But you're kind of like forging your own path, and that's kind of like to me, the big takeaway from what you've done. And you're still a young guy, so I mean, there's still a lot of time for you to continue doing what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I think that is probably the takeaway too. I feel fortunate, I feel blessed that this has been my path. But at the same time, I'll say this to anybody that's listening, like, I made it happen. Like, I talked to so many people that just don't make it happen. Like, I actually did a post on this on my LinkedIn like a month or two ago. We were out with some friends at dinner, like a group of friends, and the conversation went around the table, like, hey, if you could be doing anything right now, like for a job, like what would you be doing? Like, what's your dream job? What would you be doing? And everybody kind of, there was like eight couples, there was like 16 people, like started going around the table, kind of giving their answers. And there was one guy that was like a doctor, and he's like, if I could do anything, I'd be a forest ranger.
That's awesome.
And I was like, okay, cool. Like, he's a very successful doctor. And I'm like, he wants to be a forest ranger. And then there was somebody else was like, oh, if I could do anything, I'd write a book, or I'd be an author. And the whole time I was thinking, why aren't you doing it? Like, if you want to be a forest ranger, go be a forest ranger. Like, what are you doing? Like, why would you just say that and not do it? I don't, but there's so many people. I mean, they feel trapped in this rat race or whatever you want to call it. Like, they feel trapped. They're not confident enough to take the jump, to take the leap, take the risk. It's too risky in their mind. I don't know what it is. There's a lot of reasons, and my only advice is, like, if you don't do anything to change it, it's never going to change. So I hit my breaking point about whatever, 8 years or 10 years ago or so, whatever it was. But you just gotta, like, I super love where I am right now, but it didn't just happen. Like, I had to consciously create it and like take steps to make it happen. And a lot of those were risky steps. And a lot of people thought I was kind of crazy doing it at the beginning. Family, friends, everybody. When we sold our house and went to Europe, we had like our neighbors that were really good friends were like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And like, they just didn't understand. They're like, we have a perfect life here. Like, you have a perfect house. Like, we had a really nice house. It was like, and they're like, what are you doing? You just gotta go out and take what's yours. You gotta do it, even though it's scary and risky. That's actually one of my favorite quotes is, like, I don't even know the exact quote, but it's a Mr. Beast quote, where he said something like, everybody thinks you're crazy until you do it, and then they all wanna know how you, and then they all ask you how you did it. And like, I think that to myself, like, everybody kind of thinks like, everybody thought like Mr. Beast, whatever, like, oh, you're making videos on YouTube. You're crazy, wasting your time. Okay, hundreds of millions of dollars later, like, who's laughing now? And it's like, and everybody's like, how did you do it? They think he's a genius. So it's like, you gotta do what you wanna do and make it happen. Just take steps to make it happen. And most of the time, it's gonna be scary. Honestly, like, especially when you initially do it, it's like you take a step into the dark before you see the light. But if you can do that, then I think for a lot of people that want this lifestyle, because some people, working a job, collecting your paycheck, coming home, enjoying, watching TV and just enjoying your life and not having the stress, There's something to be said for that. I don't discount that at all. Like, there's something to be said for that. But for people that want more and have that like inner burning like I did, you just gotta go.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, that's what this show's about too, is like people just kind of going for it, you know. And for people who are listening to you and picking up like all these, you know, really good pieces of advice and just stories and almost lessons that you're kind of given here on this show. Like, if someone wants to follow you, right, is LinkedIn the best place to connect with you?
Yeah, I'd say LinkedIn is the best place to connect with me. It's the only place really where I'm public. I do have some other, Instagram and stuff like
Sure.
that, but I keep that pretty private. But yeah, LinkedIn is the best. So David Feldman on LinkedIn. Yeah, David Feldman. I think if you search like David Feldman mug branding, it'll probably come up. You'll find
Yeah,
me.
I'll throw a link in the show notes for sure, so people can just kind of click it when they listen, because I think, you know, just hearing all the stuff you have going on, your background, all the foundations you've laid, and just your approach to life is really inspiring and cool for people to just follow and want to sort of be in the crowd cheering you on, because I think you're doing a lot of cool stuff. So thank you so much, obviously, for your time today and getting to know you in the brief time. Obviously, I'm sure we will continue to stay in touch beyond this podcast. But you know, again, for people listening, thank you for your time and sharing all these sorts of really inspirational just stories, like I said, and hearing about your life is really cool for people to just kind of just be motivated and just kind of take life by the horns and not be afraid to kind of take those chances.
Yeah, no, well, I appreciate you having me on. I really do, and I know we're gonna keep in touch for sure. And this won't be the last time we talk for by any means. But yeah, for everybody that's listening too, I appreciate that too. And thank you. That's all I can say. Thanks for having me.
I agree, man. Thanks, David. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Experience Curve. Please take the time to share this podcast with a friend or colleague to help get the word out about my show.